From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. We'll hear about the weather forecast and some of the data behind what's happening in South America, particularly in the soybean growing regions of Argentina, with Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net online. And along the way, I'll refer you back to a webinar that took place earlier today on agricultural policy. Jonathan Kappas will be here to discuss the Farm Bill debate for 2023 on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, where you can find on our website right now a way to register for the all-day Ag Outlook. It's coming up Thursday, the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday. At the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $30. Details online at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day at $6.70¾, finished down 7¾¢. The May at $6.69, down 7¼. December at $5.90¹, a nickel lower. March soybeans down a half at $15.19¼. May $15.11¾, two lower. And new crop November soybeans down 5½¢ at $13.65¼ a bushel. Bean meal up $13.60. The bean oil $1.54 lower. Wheat futures soft red for the day at $7.57¼ in the lead. March down 7½. The hard red $8.79, down 17¢. Live cattle futures at $163.62½, 7½¢ lower. Feeders at $186.82½, up 37½¢. And lean hogs 75¢ higher at $83.25. Gold futures for the day down $13.40. Gasoline a penny and 3/10 of a cent lower, and the wholesale price of crude oil down 35¢. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago and yesterday's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report from the United States Department of Agriculture. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Let's get right into this. First, not a lot of changes in the report yesterday. What'd you find of most interest?
In all honesty, you take the ethanol number down 25 million bushels. That's totally understandable. As far as exports are concerned, a lot of us felt like they might actually take exports down 25 as well. Took a pretty big chunk out last month, though, so it looks like they're happy there for now. But, taking the carry out up 25 on corn, it makes sense. I think it could go up a little more yet. There's no doubt demand has been impacted, which is exactly what you would expect with high-priced corn. You go over to the bean side of things and crush goes down 15. A lot of that is a logistical issue because the crush margins have still been fantastic, to say the least. And so, carry out at 2¼ on beans is still rather tight, but I don't think that anybody was too alarmed by it because the initial weakness certainly came in and got bought later on. So you come in here today, nobody seems to really want to buy this thing, but nobody wants to sell it too bad either. So I've got to think that as far as the report's concerned from the domestic side, I don't see a huge impact. And you look over at the world side, I thought it was very interesting with Argentina's corn crop down 5 million tons, that they're lowering their exports 4 million tons. I think people need to understand just how big a deal it is whenever Argentina's excess, if you will, gets cut. And of course, the bean crop gets cut as well. But overall, the bean crop's going to be larger in South America because Brazil's looking like they're going to have a whopper. So I think the main takeaway is on the world stage, you've got about 65 million tons less corn being produced year over year, and carryout's only going down 11 million tons. And Todd, I tell you what, that's telling you that a lot of demand has left the building for the time being.
I'm wondering whether you thought very much about the way inflation is playing into the marketplace and the jobs report, which was really, really tight. I think the best in 54 years or something along those lines. Does that all give a lift to the marketplace that we thought might need to actually lose some of its price over the next month and a half to 2 months? Has it just found new support?
In all honesty, that's a tough call. I think you look at the jobs report, and I think the one thing that's tough on from a lot of people's vantage point is that it sure looks like the Fed is going to continue to raise rates with the jobs report being so strong. And so if they're going to raise rates, I don't necessarily think the dollar is going to fall precipitously. I think if rates started coming down, I could certainly see the dollar potentially really getting, coming off its perch. I mean, yeah, you look at we're $10 off where we were at last summer, but at the same time, historically, we're rather high still. So I do think the dollar eventually is going to fall. A lot of that's going to have to do with whenever you finally see interest rates kind of fall off just a little bit. But overall, I think commodities are looked to as a safe haven right now. I think a lot of folks are very concerned about their equities portfolio. And I've got to think while equities or commodities may not rally through the roof, I've got to think you're at least going to have some underlying support. So with that being said, I certainly wouldn't sit here and let that be my marketing plan, though, because, you know, I think that, you know, if the funds do decide that this story's gotten old enough, at some point they're going to take off. And when they do, it could go pretty quickly.
Are you less concerned today about prices going down than you were 2 weeks ago? I know you're still concerned, clearly, and that you think producers ought to have some of their crop marketed or protected in some form. But over the 2 week period, have your concerns eased?
No, I don't know about that. I mean, overall, to be honest with you, the report probably just is a kick in the can down the road, punting type situation. I've got to think from an old crop perspective, we're probably going to be looking at somewhat of a sideways situation. As far as new crop goes, though, it's anyone's guess. You know, you continue to lose a little bit of demand, and you know that that's going to go over into the new crop balance sheet, and it's going to be tough to get all that demand back right away. So my personal thought is that when it comes right down to it, that old crop's probably well supported for the time being, whereas new crop, it's going to be very interesting. A lot of it's going to have to do with what goes on as far as the spring of crops concerned, first of all, and can we ever get some corn exports going? Because if we can't get some corn exports in the next 3 months, it's going to be carryout's going to grow even more.
Bean basis for soybeans has been really good. Will it continue to be that way?
You know, I think bean basis is going to stay pretty good because there's a lot of parts of the country that just simply don't have a whole lot of beans available. But whenever you look, for instance, at the river, you know, you've seen actually spreads kind of reverse a little bit, whereas, you know, you've got more carry in the market for beans. We knew that would happen because less demand up front because exports would start drying up. Interestingly, though, for corn, we've also seen the same thing. And so it doesn't look like the export demand has showed up in the fashion that we'd like to have seen it happen.
What should producers do with that 30% of the bean crop that they have left, old crop?
With the old crop that they've got left, you know, in all honesty, I see no reason with rewarding the market getting down to gambling bushels. That's what I personally would do. But at the same time, it sure has been advantageous to have any corn or beans, you name it, over the last couple, 3 years and hold on to it longer into the year. Don't think that's going to necessarily be the case this year. I understand why you want to do it, but every year is different.
You're traveling in the western, northwestern part of the Corn Belt this week. What are you hearing from farmers about what they have in the bin and what they're willing to move?
Yeah, I mean, they've been definitely blessed with a significantly better basis than what they typically see. They've got a lot of question marks, but, you know, you ask them, hey, if you went ahead and sold out today, what kind of year would you have had in 22? Or, you know, most of them are going to tell you that it's bordering best ever, if not best ever. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of them that are sitting here thinking maybe we should get down to a little more comfortable level as far as your old crop stocks are concerned. A lot of question marks, of course, about new crop. A lot of folks are thinking maybe there could be some swing acres come over to corn due to the fact that, you know, nat gas has plummeted and it should be, you know, a really good effect, if you will, on some of our fertilizer prices. So they may not come down immediately, but they're certainly lower than what they were last fall already.
Have they tried pricing it out, and can they see that yet?
Not necessarily on the anhydrous front, but you know, definitely seeing some easing, I guess. Well, really for all three, they're seeing some easing, but at the same time, not to the point where, like for instance, most of these retailers are full of anhydrous, you know, and they're not full of 250 nat gas. I mean, it's a significantly higher level than that. So you've got to think that the longer person waits, and there's probably a decent chance that they could get even lower prices than the $175 to $200 that we backed off on nitrogen.
Hey, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net and will join us for the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can, too. Register today at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. or on the FarmDoc website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Matt and nine colleagues of his that you hear here on Illinois Public Media will join us for that day to talk about the commodity markets. The FarmDoc team, the Ag Economist from the U of I, will be there covering all kinds of issues from budgets to outlays and renewable diesel and, of course, farm policy. In fact, earlier today, Jonathan Kappas, our Ag Policy Specialist, along with Nick Paulson and Jim Baltz behind the scenes and myself as a moderator, hosted a webinar on this particular topic, and I'll give you a flavor for what this 2023 Farm Bill debate might look like. Jonathan Kappas walked us through some of the economics and the politics of it as it's related to the two sides of the Farm Bill, that which helps farmers and the food and feeding programs, also known as SNAP.
And the Congressional Research Service has helpfully compiled the last 20 plus years of actual spending under the farm bills going back to 1990. And then it has added, and this is from a couple years ago, so it's a little bit dated, it has added the projected spending that CBO had back in 2019. What I think we take away from this is another snapshot of the politics and the challenges in negotiating and moving a farm bill through Congress, as well as some of the policy trends in this bill. And so if we start at the bottom of this chart, the conservation programs we see having steadily increased in spending since 1990, which makes sense because the current conservation suite of programs was authorized in 1985. And so we've increased in the programs, we've increased funding as we went since 1985 and 1990. So pretty standard upward, simple upward trend there. The red bars are our Title I commodity programs, the farm support, safety net, subsidies, whatever titles you want to use for them. And you can see the countercyclical nature of those. You know, when prices are low or revenues are low, we see higher spending under those. When prices are doing well, you see a lot less spending under the Title I programs, particularly since 2014 when the direct payment program went away. These are much more dependent on the markets and what prices are doing, at least on a national average across a 12-month marketing year.
FYI, the Title I programs are things like ARC PLC, the programs that are designed to smooth out farm income over a series of years.
And then finally, the blue bars are the third bucket of mandatory spending for farm policy, and that is the crop insurance program, which has really taken off since the massive reform effort in 2000 that increased premium assistance, increased participation as a result. So that's the farm side of the equation, if you will. And then obviously what stands out to everybody are the food assistance or SNAP outlays.
They stand out in charts, they stand out in spending, all because they make up about 80% of the budget.
That has grown substantially since 2008 in the Great Recession. Of course, the pandemic will have also impacted this. And so we will see an increase in that in the CBO baseline.
The baseline budget is really important because it is what Congress put into place to cap allocations, or at least to make sure that allocations stay flat and that if a budget increase is warranted in one place, there's an offset in another. It's an argument that is really important within the confines of the farmer and food and feeding programs encapsulated in what we call the Farm Bill.
It always sort of bothers me if we leave as the only answer to this what sounds like a cynical deal, political deal to count votes in Congress. What I would like everybody to remember is that the nutrition programs, the SNAP program, help people buy food. These are low-income individuals. These are families, people with kids, elderly, some of them with disabled members of the household who are using these funds to buy food. And so it is important in its own right. It is unfortunate that we have so many people who fall below the poverty line and need this assistance. But it is not, in my mind, good politics to attack this program, particularly from a farmer standpoint, when these are helping some of your customers purchase food in the supply chain to which you are supplying. So I would like to think that we can move beyond this debate and this discussion. and not go through this again, but I'm concerned that we will find ourselves in a third time around fighting over a SNAP program.
The Farm Bill, with its two parts, the food and feeding programs and the farm programs, had been passed by Congress since the 1960s with debate, but without being stopped until 2014, when it did not pass through the House, and 2018, when it did not pass through the House at least twice, and finally came into law on the third vote in the House. And while those debates centered on the size of the food and feeding programs, Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist at the University of Illinois, says that they went deeper into the amount of spending that Congress does in all programs, including the farm programs, and that everything would be on the table in 2023 should that debate continue. Let's take a look at the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He is at T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Thanks, Mike, for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Todd. Great to be back.
We should start in Argentina, where the crop has just been under duress for a long time. And while I'm interested in the forecast, I'm also interested in what we know about the data related to particularly soybean production in that nation. Start where you want, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great way to start it out because it has been unusually dry. We collect proprietary data here for key areas of Argentina, as well as all different areas of the world. But for soybeans in particular, it's been unusually dry, and that's a situation that's probably going to continue. If you start on May 1st and then take what's happened since then, and then give the region about an inch and a half of rain over the next couple of weeks, because that looks like a fairly reasonable forecast. If you start on May 1st and do all of that, taking us out to February 23rd, it'll end up being the driest in more than 38 years over that period of time. Now, it has been raining a little bit here and there, especially over the last couple of months. So if you start on October 1st, it would only be the third driest of the last 38 years. You start on December 1st, the sixth driest, and if you start January 1st, the seventh driest of the last 38 years. So what this means, Todd, is that we've been in this long-running drought here for the last 7 to 8 months, and it's been the worst drought on record by that measure. But if you narrow it down a little bit to the last 1 or 2, maybe even 3 months, it still has been unusually dry and certainly one of the worst droughts on record, but it doesn't stick out quite as much. And that's because we have been getting some rains here and there, and that's why this is a little bit of a tricky situation. If you think about soybeans, typically what you would have for a poor crop is you would not see a lot of rain during the middle part of the season or the latter half of the season, but it really wouldn't matter too much what happens in the start because, as you know, if you plant in the dust, your bins will bust, that type of mentality where if you get it in the ground, the rains eventually show up and it doesn't really matter how dry it was in the spring. Well, this situation might be a little different, and it certainly is being reported that way simply because it was so dry that it's already taken away a lot of their production potential. And we've seen that from numerous agencies out of Argentina saying that, and even the USDA is on board with a major production loss because of the dryness. So we'll see how it all pans out because it hasn't been that dry over the last 1 to 2 months, but over the long period of time, certainly a problem. And the other problem is the forecast. Yes, we could see 1 to 1.5 inches of rain over the next week, but after that, there's nothing behind it for a while. So that's all we're going to see for the next 2 weeks, let's say, and that's only about half of normal. And on top of that, high temperatures around 100 degrees over the next 5 days. So just not a great situation.
So even if you get rainfall with that high a temperature, it dissipates pretty quickly. Are there other areas in South America, for instance, southern Brazil, I know has been dry, that you're actually concerned about very much?
Well, certainly the far southern part of Brazil in Rio Grande do Sul, that area needs more rain, and they've been experiencing some problematic weather for a while, too. Their forecast is certainly better in that we're going to see this cool front move into a muggy air mass next week, and that's a pretty good recipe for heavy rain in that region. So the dryness story might come to an end in far southern Brazil and even in Paraguay by a week from now, but that's still a week from now, and you know how forecasts can change. But more importantly than that, every day that goes by with dry and hot weather, you're taking away that yield potential even if you do get a lot of rain later next week.
In the center west Monte Grosso area, where I think about 30% or more of the soybeans are raised, they're in the midst of harvest. Something like 9 to 10% along. A little rainfall there that has been delaying things. What do you see?
Well, it's certainly going to be a little bit wet, but it's always a little bit wet at this time of the year. They get thunderstorms with regularity throughout January and March, and even most of, January, February, and most of March. So seeing these rains right now, while maybe not ideal, it's not all that unusual. If we look at their numbers, we'll take Goiás and Mato Grosso, which includes about 40 to 50% of their soybeans. They haven't been that wet, maybe around number 15 wettest of the last 38 years, starting back on January 1st. So that doesn't strike us as a big concern. And the forecast for the next week or so doesn't look super wet, just storms here and there like you might expect. The only concern, if there is one, would be about 10 days from now, because this cool front that's going to sweep through Argentina and southern Brazil over the next week will eventually reside in that region in 10 days from now. And that's a pretty good recipe for heavy rain. But even if we see that heavy rain, you need to see heavy rain for days and days and days and days on end, because they just see a lot of rain at this time of the year.
Here in the United States, farmers, others are always concerned when we come through a dry fall on the idea that we might have problems the coming year based on what's not in the ground, moisture that is. However, meteorologists tend to tell me that, you know, the change of the seasons can make a big difference. Will it this year?
Well, if you look out the window today, I mean, it's certainly been raining a lot today. We've seen decent rain and snow events over the last couple of months. And while I might not agree that just because you're changing seasons means you might expect something totally different from what you experienced in the past, and that's primarily because weather is fairly independent across time. What happened a month or two ago doesn't necessarily translate into what might happen a month or two later. But all that being said, the forecast is certainly looking wet for the central U.S. A number of fairly large systems are going to move through over the next couple of weeks. And we think that by the time we get into the start of March, most areas are going to be looking at pretty decent conditions from a soil moisture standpoint. We'll have rained a lot over the next 2 weeks, and that brings us into March. And once we're in March, I don't think there'll be a lot of dryness and drought talk at that point in time. And that doesn't mean anything for what happens months after that, but at least in the very beginning of the season, when people start to think a little bit harder about this stuff, there's not going to be a whole lot of dryness concerns.
Any place else across the planet you want to check in on, or are we good for the day?
I think we're good for the day, Todd. I mean, some people have noted that it's been pretty dry across Europe and Russia and Ukraine, but it's only been like that for the last month or so, and we know that it'll be a while before we have to think about a whole lot there, with them still needing a couple more months before they even can start thinking about wheat growing more. So there's not really a whole lot else to think about than what we've already discussed.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep, great being here.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather. Find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.